Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Birch and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read, pretty much as I read it. Not one a week, not one a month, nothing like that. It's just whenever I finish a book, I think about it for a bit, do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. I'm still working on a cruise ship. Well, actually, I finished working ages ago, but I've still been sitting here on the cruise ship with no more shows to do, waiting to get into Lisbon. But I did have a really nice day in the Azores. The other day, I was wanting to go swimming with dolphins, but it was too windy, so I couldn't do that. But while I was there, I did upload one of the previous podcasts that I recorded right at the beginning of the cruise, so hopefully you got that. But I do go home tomorrow, so now I'm in Lisbon, or just literally sailing into Lisbon as I speak, going underneath the big red bridge there, which looks like the Golden Gate Bridge, just going under that there. And coming to Lisbon, so I'll upload this podcast this afternoon, I guess. Next time, the next show that I'm going to do, which is after this one, I'll be reviewing Crystal Rain by Tobias Espakel. I'm sure I'll get that finished by the time I get home. And I'm going to do another live show this Thursday, coming Thursday the 7th of May at 11 p.m. That's 11 p.m. my time, which will be Central European summer times. So that would be like 10 p.m. British summer time, and I guess 9 p.m. universal time code time or something like that. So check that out if you want to see me record the podcast live. Last time I did that, it was quite a good success. I had a lot of fun. So go to ustream.tv/Luke Burridge on Thursday night. I'll see you there. Or again, if you want a reminder or different links, just follow me on Twitter, which is @LukeBurridge or LukeBurridge at Twitter. No, whatever it is. And you can find me on my blog, which is lukeburridge.com/blog. I'll put news and bits and pieces and little bits and things on all these little bits and things around the internet somewhere that you can follow me wherever you want to. I'm going to get directly onto the review because I'm going to try something a little bit different here, because I did actually read and finish Charles Stross's book. I think it's one of his latest books, called Halting State. And the entire book is written in second person present tense. So what I thought I'd do is just have a little bit of fun here and actually do my entire review in second person. So I'm not sure if this is going to work out. Maybe I'll just sort of like re-record it again in first person if it doesn't. But here we go. Let's see how it works out. So this book is Halting State by Charles Stross. It was written in 2007. It's around about 350 pages long. And because you are working on a cruise ship, you found this book in the library, as you were. You also found The Accidental Time Machine, because they have a lot of new books here. And this is a book that you hadn't read before. And you picked it up, first of all, and you read the first sort of like few pages, four or five pages, and you thought, wow, this second person kind of stuff is really, really annoying. So what you did, you just put it down. But the thing is, what you should have done is just carried on reading. And if you did, you'd have got all the way through and thoroughly enjoyed it. And that is actually what you managed to do. So previous books that you've read by Charles Stross are sort of far future post-singularity books, such as Accelerando and Singularity Sky. And you guess that Halting State, because it says here in the front cover it's set in 2018 and there's a policewoman doing her job. You thought, well, maybe this is going to be a bit more to a human level. And actually, it turns out you're right. So, first of all, you normally talk on your podcast about the world of the book. So, this book is set in 2018, and it's set in Scotland, mostly Edinburgh. And Scotland is no longer part of the United Kingdom, so England and Scotland now two separate countries. You never do find out what's happened to Wales or Northern Ireland, but you guess they probably have split up as well. But Scotland is still part of some kind of administration of the UK islands, the British Isles, and is still part of the EU. Edinburgh has become home to many kind of different technical companies and finance companies, because they sort of work there under slightly different regulations than can be found in London. And Stross obviously knows Edinburgh very, very well. And you are pretty glad that you visited the city a few times, because if you didn't know the layout and the sort of look of the city and the vibe of the city and a bit about the history of the city and the geography of the city, it could have been a little bit tricky to follow. But of course, because you've been to Edinburgh before, you could just relax and concentrate on the story. But you think that maybe a listener to the podcast who wants to read this book and who hasn't been to Edinburgh, they might be a little bit confused about it. You're not really sure. This book deals almost exclusively with the sort of like high-end technical world and the way it meets with sort of police procedural kind of world. Technology and computing in 2018 has moved on quite a lot. So instead of just having telephones and mobile phones, everyone wears these glasses which overlay your vision with added information. You'll talk a little bit more about this later on in the podcast, but just to, as it sets up the things that are relevant to the world and to the story, first of all, you can have virtual reality because, of course, you can have the two different vision images in two different eyes. You can get the 3D virtual reality kind of stuff going on there, and virtual reality games in the style of World of Warcraft and Second Life. Well, not so much Second Life, more like World of Warcraft. Lots of, you know, swords and sorcery and stuff. That's a big business. But also, you can have augmented reality, which is you see the world around you, but there's layers of more information over the top of it. For example, the police use this this sort of realm called cop space, and they, when they look around, they are tied into the police database. So every building that they look at, they can see sort of the crime statistics of it, and every person that they see, well, not maybe every person, but a lot of people that you can see, if they have a criminal record, the criminal record or the kind of criminal they are is displayed hovering above the head. And any time that they see a crime and they want to report anything, the crime is sort of analyzed by the glasses and said, okay, and it says, what you should do is now do this and charge them with this. So that's cop space. And there's all their augmented realities as well that we talk about, which is, for, one is sword fighting, which is described as the live action role playing, and that means that you actually have a sword in your hand and you sort of hack at somebody, but it's not a computer game, you really are doing it, but the information is over overlaid, so you've actually just got a padded stick in your hand, and when you whack someone with the stick, it doesn't hurt. But it looks like you've got a real sword, and they can see you as though you've got a real sword, and you're a knight, and you're that kind of thing as well. And finally, you've also got the alternative reality kind of role-playing games as well, which doesn't use the technology of the glasses so much, or virtual reality kind of stuff. You actually play in the real world, so it says, actually go and do this, and actually go and do that, and actually do this. So you play the part in the real world, the part of a spy, or a thief, or a special agent, or something like that, and yeah, that's the kind of thing. So this novel mostly concerns that, those kind of technologies, and specifically a company called Hayek Associates, and they are a finance company that regulates commerce within a big sort of World of Warcraft like massively multiplayer online game. And this is actually, turns out, it's quite big business, you discover, and it's worth millions and millions of euros. So the story itself, you want to talk a little bit about that. So Hayek Associates, like I say, they have this bank, or they own or control a bank in a world called Avalon 4, and that's some kind of big, like, floating kingdom. It floats on this big mushroom-shaped rock in virtual reality, of course. And in the opening chapters, you read a bit about a bank heist, which involves lots of orcs. And the orcs come in, and they got this dragon to back them up. And the orcs come in, and they steal loads and loads of loot, and they escape with it into, sort of down through these different portals into other realms. Because it turns out that you can go from one sort of, like, World of Warcraft, and you can take your belongings with you from one to another. There's like exchange rates between them, so when you cross over into another realm, Hayek Associates doesn't sort of control that, like the commerce there. So if you steal one thing from one realm into another, you take it with you, and then you can also convert the money back out again into euros or dollars or whatever the loot is worth. The thing is, this wouldn't be a big problem except that Hayek security should have been stronger than that, and it shows that the security in this virtual bank has been breached at a high level, at such a high level that it means that it has to have been some kind of inside job, but they're not quite sure what's going on. And Hayek Associates have just gone public as well, and if this fact gets out into sort of like the wider world, they could lose like 30 million euros or whatever that sort of their business is worth at the time. So what happens is, there's this marketing director, and he panics, and he calls in the local police, And Sue Smith is the police sergeant sent to investigate. And she doesn't understand at all what she's dealing with at the beginning, because she's like, oh, you've had a robbery. And she doesn't understand that it's actually like a virtual reality. And then when she does look at it, she thinks it's just a game. And it's only after it's been explained to her, no, it's like this is a game which is worth millions upon millions upon millions of euros. And when that amount of money is being sort of thrown about in Scotland, it means that it could also become a political matter as well. Meanwhile, you read about two other characters as well. First is Elaine, and Elaine is a forensic accountant who also enjoys augmented reality sword fighting, just happens to be that kind of way. And she works for this London insurance, like an insurance company, but like an underwriting insurance. So it's like a insurance for insurers and bankers and other financial institutions. And this company, I can't remember the name now. Oh, sorry, you can't remember the name now. Finds out about this Hayek situation, and they like take a team up from London to Edinburgh to investigate. And because Elaine is somehow involved in games, you know, she does this augmented reality gaming, they say, hey, you do games, you should come with us and you can help us out there. And the thing is, she doesn't really know anything about virtual reality worlds, only about sort of augmented reality games, but they take her along anyway. And this company, this forensic accountancy company, they need to prove that something illegal has happened, or, you know, and if something illegal has happened, it means that they don't have to pay the insurance, or they can pay the insurance, or something like that. You can't actually remember the detail that well. So as Elaine, nobody in Elaine's company understands what's going on, and neither does Elaine. They hire a technical computing kind of guy to look into the technical and computing side of Hayek Associates' work. And so Elaine hires a guy called Jack, and Jack is a recently unemployed Python 3000 programmer, or whatever the geeky term is for the different kind of thing that he uses. He's worked on many similar games to the things that Hayek Associates helps run. So Jack and Elaine team up to investigate Hayek from within the virtual world. Meanwhile, Sue, the policewoman, she goes out and tracks down someone called Nigel McDonald, who's a programmer who's gone missing from Hayek Associates, and they're going, okay, this is probably the guy who's been doing this kind of inside dealing. Of course, you soon discover that the situation is far more complex than just like this virtual bank heist and this breach of security. That turns out just to be a trigger to spark off a much more dangerous series of events, and more interesting and more convoluted series of events. For example, Hayek Associates has its finger in many more pies than just virtual online community banking financial kind of gubbins. And you soon read that there's like these large-scale conspiracies, and, you know, there's government agencies and anti-terrorism squads and black nets. And black nets are, I guess, explained as loosely connected like criminal organizations, sort of, and it's all mediated through like these computer networks, but secret computer networks. So, you know, they sort of do favors for each other, and you can trade illegal acts and illegal goods through the black net, and much more goes on as well. And the name of the book, you discover, is actually a nice play on words. Halting state, you think, is a computer term, something to do with like when you play out a calculation, the ultimate conclusion is the halting state. When the calculation stops, that'll be it. That's the state at the end of its calculation. But also, halting state could also mean, as in state, as in a country that comes to a complete stop, comes to a complete halt, halting state. So, of course, there is a lot at stake, not just for Hayek Associates, but also for Scotland and the wider world. You found that the story is far, far more satisfying than Strauss's other novels. For a start, there is actually a story in there as well. Every three or four chapters, you read another revelation, and the story expands to get like another level, a greater level. And to be honest, you think that it actually went a little bit too big. You know, you really enjoyed it. Excuse me. Excuse you. There's room service trying to get in my room.
No, thank you.
Where were you? Oh yeah, you really enjoyed it when the characters were sort of fighting for smaller things rather than the big stakes. Once the stakes go too high, the enemy sort of becomes a bit too faceless, and the action then you're sort of it's you think it was a little bit less fun towards the end of the book. And the story does lag towards the end as well. There's also the obligatory Charles Stross, hey, and this person is working for this person is working for this person, and hey, guess what, this person is working for this person. And the whole sort of like reverse exposition where we're told the initial motivations of this character and this character and this character, and they're all working for this guy, and you're like, oh, all right, okay. But, however, in this story, unlike Stross's other books, there is actually a bit of a point to this revelation because the story is a mystery. Singularity Sky was just like this space opera, turgid space opera with like seemingly no point or conclusion to the plot. And Accelerando was just a collection of short stories, all just set in the same world, sort of sequentially after one another. You didn't realise that at the time about that book, and you'd have probably, if you would have read it as a series of short stories, you might have enjoyed it more, but as a novel, certainly lacking. This book, though, Halting State, much, much better. Next up, you normally talk about characters. So this story is told from three points of view, as you just said before, Sue, Elaine, and Jack, and they each take a chapter in turn, and they always take the third chapter each, you know, whichever it comes to, and it continues like that throughout the book. You really liked all the characters, or all the three main characters, all were quite engaging and interesting, and so were a number of the secondary characters. Not all of them, you must admit, but all of the main characters are pretty good. And you actually found this surprising because they were all written in the second person. You found that, you know, you were being told, you do this and you do that. You know, it really puts you right into the shoes of the character and forces you to see things from their point of view. Which you found quite surprising. You thought it would really get in the way, but actually it just flowed once you were a few chapters in. Of course, it did take you a few chapters to get used to it, but once you got into it, you really found it. You could like flow through the book. It removes the edges. You just wrote a note down here as well. You remove the edges from the characters. Normally you read, she did this, but now because it goes, you did this, it's sort of like, you don't know how to explain it. It's like there's no gender reference there. As one example, the character is like the gender is sort of missing from the character, but not missing, but it's not blatant about it. It's not she, it's you. So you see the characters far more as people, as humans, as characters, rather than woman character or female character number one or love interest, you know. You can't really explain it very well, but it's a strange feeling. It's like a book that subverts gender roles within the main characters. And the same with sexuality. Sue, the policewoman, as far as you can tell, is in a homosexual relationship, but it doesn't really impact the story in like the crass way that kind of lesbianism does normally do in a story like this. It often feels like forced or gratuitous, but here it's just a fact about Sue's life, and being like the second person narrative, it just makes it completely natural. It just said, oh, you did this, here's your son, and here's your partner, but it just names her. You can't remember the name, but it just goes on with it, and you realize that actually, yeah, this is a big part of Sue's life, but Sue is a policewoman, and she really does separate her life into work and into home life, and the two really stay separate there, which I quite like. Elaine and Jack, I made a note, you made a note here, Elaine and Jack, they seem to be a little bit too neat for cyberpunk, because this is a cyberpunk kind of novel, and they're just a little bit too contrived, almost too contrived. And at one point, actually, though, Elaine creates this character to play in the Avalon 4 virtual reality, massively multiplayer online world, and yet at the same time, these characters, they seem a little bit too created, a little bit too like, ah, we need this aspect in the character, we need this aspect in the character. So Charles Stross just put them together. But then, in a, like an amazing kind of get-out-of-jail-free kind of play later on in the book, Stross explains exactly why Elaine and Jack are such perfect fits for their place in the story, for their role in the story. But you don't want to give it away to the listeners of your podcast, so you'll just leave it at that. Just to say that, yes, they do that. The characters, they get added depth as well when there's the slight overlap between the chapters. You know, as you read two different perspectives on the same event, especially with Elaine and Jack, Elaine will think something or do some, see something and think something, or you will think something in her shoes, and then Jack will see the same kind of event and think about it from the other direction, or vice versa, and that works well with the overlap there. And you made one more note as you read the book. Yeah, tell the listeners not to read the chapter titles. Sure, of course, Elaine and Jack, they spend a lot of time together, and you know that they're going to get it on, but like, there's no way to give it away. There's no reason to give it away 10 pages in advance by sort of naming the chapters about sort of like... It's a clever plays on words with the chapter titles, but sometimes it does give it away a little bit about what's going to happen. Most importantly, though, the writing style for each of the characters changes as you read it, as you read the book. You read about Jack, and he's a computer geek and technical geek and computer programmer. So everything that you read from him, he thinks of himself as like interfacing with other people and grepping relationships. You know, he thinks in terms of computer and tech jargon in the same way that Sue, the policewoman, thinks in terms of police procedurals, and Elaine thinks in terms of like accountancy and bureaucracy and big business office speak. And even though you don't read who you are reading about, it's just you rather than he did this or Jack did this, it's just you do this, you can always keep track of who's doing what because of these completely different styles of writing. Well, not completely different styles of writing, but there are some big changes in the writing style as you go through the different characters, which helps a lot. Not just, you know, it's not just a stylistic thing, it really is a character based kind of thing. You really, really get to know all three of the characters very well because of the different ways that they look at life, and because you, the reader, are looking at it in through their eyes, you get to know them very well. The motivations, characters, pretty strong, mainly greed, in terms of Jack and Elaine. Jack is like, hey, you're paying me how much? Sure, I'll do whatever you want. And the same with Elaine as well. And they don't really go for like the whole morality kind of angle, and like, when one of the other characters, as part of one of the conspiracies, sort of appeals to their sort of greater, like them caring about like the greater good or patriotism, he knows that they don't really care about it. He knows that they just want the money, and it's true, they pretty much do want the money. Although you did find it a little bit strange that after being manipulated by the conspiracies, like, they immediately wanted to join up with those same conspiracies, and they didn't seem to have any questions about the safety, or maybe a little bit about the safety, but you thought it was just like, oh, they just want the money and blow everything else. But hey, it's a bit strange, but again, I guess that's... It's best to have complex characters, but it seemed a little bit too simplistic, some of the choices of the characters towards the end of the novel. And finally, you made a note here, you wanted to mention Jack's secret. Jack obviously has a secret, he's hiding something right from the beginning of the book. And it turns out that the secret is actually a lot less interesting and important than you first imagined. But again, that plays into the character, because Jack is this non-functioning, like, he's like socially non-functional. He's like this uber techie geek programmer kind of guy, and he just doesn't get social interaction. So he blows these smaller things completely out of proportion, and then misses huge things elsewhere. So all the way through the book, he's got this like this secret, and in the end, it's just like, oh well, that's not too bad. And yet other things that are going on, you're like, why don't you care about this kind of thing? Which is a bit strange. I don't want to. So you don't want to spoil it for your listeners there, but yes, that is one point. Okay, you next talk about technology in your podcast, and the listeners like that. So here we go. In Stross's other novels, you found... I'll put it this way. Unlike Stross's other novels, in this book, in Holding State, you found that the technology and ideas really added to the story and just weren't flown in for flavour. Charles Stross is the ideas guy. You know, you go to him for ideas. So... someone actually just sent you an email the other day saying, hey, check out this small article by Charles Stross, how he talks about ideas. And Charles Stross, in this article that someone, David, I think it was, emailed me, Charles Stross says, oh, yes, of course, ideas are really easy. Ideas, anyone can come with ideas. It's putting them into the story, that, you know, making a story out of them, which is the hard part. And in his other novels, it seems like he hasn't done the putting them into the story. He didn't do the hard part. Whereas in this book, he did do the hard part and actually made a story around them. So there doesn't seem to be too much gratuitous ideas and technology, but there is a little bit. The augmented reality glasses are quite an old idea. Peter F. Hamilton, he wrote about them in the Night's Dawn trilogy, and it's been done before. They even feature in the novel that you've written yourself last year, your first novel, Edward, working title, which you're currently awaiting feedback from the listeners who requested it. You think you'd just mention that to anyone who hasn't emailed back about that. Anyway, Strauss deals with these like augmented reality glasses really, really well, and he takes it up to like he adds like new sort of life and depth to it. You especially like the trip that they take to this games conference where you read about like thousands of people, hundreds of people, and they're all in their own reality and they're all playing separate games at the same time. So some people are in like this World of Warcraft and fantasy world, and other people are in like a science fiction world, and other people are in there like a Victorian steampunk kind of world, and they're all existing in the same world at the same time, which you really quite enjoy that kind of playfulness with the technology. The virtual reality and metaverse kind of multiverse hyperverse ideas are great too, and the thing that you really like about them in this book, along with the sort of augmented reality tech, is that they're either utterly, like, completely functional, like Cop Space and like the business spaces that they use, or they're completely for fun. So there's no middle ground. Nobody just hangs out. Well, some people do just hang out, but the thing is, in other cyberpunk novels, they seem to make like virtual reality to be some kind of place of business or work, or somehow it's really important in the world. And in Holding State, it is important to the world, but just as a way to have fun. It's all just a game, and that's the most important thing. It's all about people paying to have fun, and that's where the real business is. And, you know, like, when you die in the game, you don't really die. You just sign up for a different account or reset your character. You don't die in real life at all, which is always really, really stupid. Well, not always really stupid, but often really stupid in cyberpunk novels. And, of course, some factions within the book do subvert the use of the games and use them for more serious purposes, but then the technology, it's solely designed for having fun, but then is, like I say, it's being twisted for other purposes rather than being for sort of more like mundane purposes in the first place. You could talk more about technology, but really, Charles Strauss himself does it a lot better. He talks about technology a lot better than you could do, even though he does use a lot of jargon. And talking about jargon, you might as well move now on to the writing style itself. You think you might have quite a bit to say on this matter. As you just said before, you find that the second person writing, you know, for second person present tense sort of narrative, it works surprisingly well. You know, apparently, you read before, actually, you knew about this book beforehand. Apparently, Strauss did this sort of to pay homage to text-based, like, adventure games and choose-your-own-adventure games. Sort of, you are in a twisty maze of little passages, all alike, and such kind of things, like putting you into the place of the protagonist. But as you said, it's more than just a gimmick. It really does add a lot to the book. But of course, you're sure that a lot of readers, they'll just be put off by it. You think that they might just, like, as you did, pick up the book, read a few pages into it, and just go, oh, can't be bothered with that. It does take a few chapters to get into it, but it really does work. And here's a testament to just how well it works, because you are currently writing your third novel at the moment. You're about 10,000 words into it, and you'll be probably writing it until the end of May. It's codenamed Human Danger. The story in Human Danger, your new novel, is told entirely in first-person past tense, which is one of the most common viewpoints. But then a few days ago, you were reading Halting State, and you put down Halting State, and then you opened up your laptop, and you began typing. And you discovered that after two paragraphs that you'd written them entirely in second-person narrative, and you didn't even realize what you were doing at all when you did it. It's only when you read back, and you're like, wow. You thought, I just wrote in second person without even thinking about it. Which you did actually write a bit in second person in your second novel, the Monster Story novel. But that was sort of just, it was just like one little element. It was mostly in first person, but alternating first person. You'll talk about that later. Anyway, so yes, second person narrative does strangely come naturally to you once you get into the flow of it. And also, this didn't just happen once. The next day you put down halting state again, and then you picked up your laptop to do your typing, and again you went straight into second person narrative. So it's very strange in that way. Anyway, next up, jargon. Yes, Strauss keeps using lots of phrases and that you don't really understand, and then he'll explain them away, like, straight away. And then at other times, he'll say something you don't understand, and he won't explain it at all, like something technical, and he just leaves it. And you discover that as you're reading through, anything that's important is explained in real English. There's so much jargon in here, it's unbelievable. But if it's important, it's actually explained. And if there's something really obscure, you realise, actually, no, it doesn't have a huge amount to do with the story itself. Actually, the story of the characters, it's there as flavour text, I guess you could call it, tying back into the whole... role-playing kind of go there. For example, there's at one point, I made a note down here, page 325, there's a quote. It's, they are tunnelling TCPIP over AD&D. And it sounds like technobabble, computer technobabble mixed with other kinds of babble. But in the context, it actually makes sense. Because if you just, you know, if even if you don't get the references, and I don't entirely understand what it means, but I sort of understand what it means, but it's just been explained in clear English. So by the time you get there, it's great. And other times it works the other way around. You read the obscure technobabble and then you get it again in clear English. So don't worry if you're reading, or you think you should tell your readers not to worry about reading this book, even if they don't get all the jargon. More on that in a second. Sue, the policewoman, is very Scottish, and some readers might get a bit confused with, like, the phonetic spelling of some of the Scottish accent and the different vocabulary. Thankfully, though, you know enough Scottish dialect because you've visited there and you know plenty of Scottish and you've watched Trainspotting. That, and you imagine you, as you're reading it, you can just imagine what's going on. You can pick it up and understand it. But you think that maybe, again, not everyone will feel the same way about that. Next up. Ah, yes, you want to talk about the references in the book, because there are a lot of references, a huge amount of references in this book that aren't explained at all. The story does work perfectly well without them, but Strauss, he seems to be completely, like, winking at you as you're reading this book. There's loads and loads of computer and, you know, references that you're sure just went straight over your head. You're not enough of a geek to catch all of them, even though you know enough about computers and you have enough, like, computer technical friends, programmer friends, who talk about this kind of thing, that you recognize that there's a reference that you just missed. You think, I really did just miss something there. And it's the same with the computer game and role-playing references as you go through as well. You've played a bit of computer games and sort of, like, once played Dungeons and Dragons when you were 12-year-old, but there's, like, lots of general jokes and references that you know you've missed, even though you did pick up on a few of them just from the things that you've picked up, like, in, you know, general cultural references in your real life. But what you really liked are the jokes and references to other science fiction, including all the nods to the cyberpunk books, especially ones that you've actually read and reviewed in the last year. Some examples, you made a note of them as you went through the book, the ones that jumped out at you that you liked. Page 134, Knife Missile is mentioned. And you're going, oh, thank you, Ian Banks. And then page 335, poor impulse control. One of the characters said that they were told they have poor impulse control. And you're like, thank you very much, Neil Stevenson and Snow Crash. But your favourite one was on page 195. And you read about this computer that crashes and the screen goes dead. The screen goes blank. Or does it go blank? No. In fact, you're told that it turns the colour of the night sky above a Japanese city. And you just think that's awesome, because the opening lines, like, of Neuromancer say something like, the sky over Chiba City was the colour of a television tuned to a dead channel, or something similar. And you think, wow, Strauss is really playing with me here when he tells me that the screen goes and turns the colour of the night sky above a Japanese city. And it's not just those references. You find many, many more references throughout the book. And again, even though you've read a lot of science fiction, you know that there's probably loads and loads more that you missed. And in Accelerando, you made a note here. In Accelerando, Strauss directly referenced other authors, other science fiction authors, saying it was like a Vingian singularity or Gibsonian hyperspace and things like that. Whereas you really don't like this because directly referencing other fiction in fiction always pulls you out of the story. It kills the believability. You can't suspend your disbelief too much. That's why Jason Bourne, he never goes, wow, this is like a James Bond adventure. And films don't reference other films because when they say, this is like fiction, you think, this is fiction, which is a bit strange. Thankfully, in Halting State, even though it's crammed full of these references, they're always presented in more of a sly, light-hearted way. Unlike Hyperion, where all of the literary references are about, this canon of literature like Keats and Shakespeare, here we have all the references of like space opera and cyberpunk and geek culture and office culture and role-playing and computer games and things like that. So the whole book has a really light-hearted, playful, joking tone. Which is good, except at some points when the action in the book isn't lighthearted anymore, and then the language is lighthearted, it sort of clashes a little bit, but it works out really well. And like you said, you only got a small percentage of references, but you still enjoyed the book a lot. So even you think that, you know, even though the book isn't for everyone, you want to warn your listeners, if they don't like technology or computer games or role-playing games or science fiction or cyberpunk or mystery and police procedural novels, if they don't like any of them, they should probably stay away from this book. But you think that, you know, they don't have to like them all, maybe just one or two of those elements, and they could probably still really, really enjoy the book. Also, one final thing about cyberpunk and the conventions there. This book plays around with the cyberpunk conventions quite well. You're always really like annoyed and just, you know, it just gets tedious, all like the excessive kind of Japanese names and culture references and samurai swords and things like that you find in cyberpunk. Here, because it's set in Scotland instead of Japan, if there's a sword fight, it's a claymore sword, like a big two-handed broadsword, because yeah, they're in Scotland and there's no katanas to be seen, which is pretty cool. I think you normally talk about different themes of the book, and you didn't actually make any notes, as you just realize now as you read your notes. You completely missed off the theme section. So just off the top of my head, the themes are, you know, lots of different things, especially where you talk about, like, there's lots of economics kind of things and social satire going on in this book. Lots of, the political kind of stuff going on, which is really, really fun to read, about, you know, capitalism and all this kind of stuff. But also, I really like the kind of determinism, or whatever the word would be, how much you are in control of your life and how much you're being controlled and what is fate and all these different kind of things that you can really play with well with when you're looking in augmented reality and these alternative reality games. It's like you think you're playing a game, but are you just playing a game? Lots of really good questions there that I really liked. Again, I didn't make very many notes as I went through the book about this, because really it's just a really fun book. Oh, sorry, you didn't make a lot of notes. It's just a really fun book. So you're really getting a bit tired of talking in second person about yourself. So you really want to wrap this up quickly. You really, really enjoyed the book, and it was a real big surprise after Charles Stross's other books that you've read. So you're really glad that you gave Charles Stross a third chance. And so, yes, if there's more non-post-singularity based science fiction from Charles Stross, you'll probably pick it up and give it a read. And like I said, put it this way, you think that if your listeners like Snow Crash and Neuromancer, they've read them, they'll love Halting State. But the thing is, you read Snow Crash and reviewed it and hated it, and you reread Neuromancer, and while you thought it was quite enjoyable in places, you thought it was severely lacking. Even though you didn't like those other books, you really had a great time with Halting State, which I think says a lot about the book, that because it's playing with the conventions, it's not trying to conform to them, it's just a lot more fun than any of the cyberpunk that I've read before, which often has like this darker feel, like more of a punk feel. This is like not so much cyberpunk, it's like cyber bubblegum Whatever. I don't know what to say about that. Anyway, it isn't perfect. The language is often a bit clunky, and there's a few plotting problems, but it really is nothing you can't overlook. So you're going to rate this book 4 stars out of 5, and that's about it. Here ends the review, and you switch back to talking in the first person. Whew, that was quite tricky to go do that, I think. I don't think I'm going to try second person reviews of any other book in the future, because there's like 3 or 4 points I might have to go back and do some edits. Anyway, I did mention before that I won't bother talking about that. I'm just a bit tired after all that. I'll just wrap up here at the end. The next live show. Next show is going to be live Thursday, May 7th, 11 p.m. Central European Summer Time. You can work out the time zones of where you are there yourself. So follow me on Twitter, and or subscribe to the to my blog, which is lukeburge.com/blog, or just email me at luke@juggler.net. I'll be responding to more emails now that I'm going to be getting off of the cruise ship tomorrow. The next book that I'm going to be reading is Crystal Rain. That's the one I'll be doing reviewing on the live show by, and it's written by Tobias S. Bukel. Again, I'm a few chapters into that, but thought I would read these books from the cruise ship library before I have to put them back at the end of the cruise when I leave tomorrow. So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this review. So email me if you didn't and you think I should record it again in first person. But I had quite a lot of fun there. So I'll catch you next time.